Robin. I'm the lead pastor here. Welcome. And most of the time that I'm not happy with God, it's because I disagree with him about something. Usually what he's doing in my life or life in general, what I see happening, I'm like, you know, God, I can't be happy with you because I disagree with what you're doing. And, you know, when you're not happy with God, you don't want to be close to God. So you don't feel like praying. You like, it's not you can't turn to Jesus when you're not happy with Jesus. And when you disagree with him, it's just a small step to wonder, well, why should I trust you? I mean, it's really hard to trust God, trust Jesus, when you disagree with what he's doing. And that's what we're going to talk about this weekend. It's the big idea. You can look in your notes, how to trust God when you disagree with him. And we're gonna look at a story, and it's a fascinating story. It's the only story in the Bible about Jesus when he's not a baby or he's not an adult. It's the only place in the Bible where we see a little bit of his childhood. And so it's in your notes. You can see that. I'll read it to you. It's this story right here. Every year his parents went to Jerusalem for the Feast of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the feast according to the custom. After the feast was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day. Then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple court, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he was saying to them. Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. Circle treasured all these things. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. So here's the big idea, how to trust God when you disagree with him. And this story is about an episode that happens around this thing called the Passover Feast. So I'll just give you like quick backdrop of it. The Passover Feast was this huge party that the Jewish nation celebrated every year, and they did it in Jerusalem, and people would come in from all the different cities and towns, and they would all migrate into Jerusalem. Jerusalem would get like, you know, 8 or 9 times bigger during this week. It was a week-long religious party. And a big, big festival, big feast. And it started, hundreds of years before. I mean, I know everybody's seen one of the Moses movies. You've seen the Charlton Heston movie or like the Disney animated Moses. And that's when all this started. Moses is the guy. He's going to come in. He's going to free all the Israelites because they've been enslaved by Egypt. I mean, Egypt and Israel, like Liz, all the time, fighting conflict all through the years. And at this period in their history, Egypt gets the upper hand, and Israel are all slaves. They're all down there. They're all slaves. And Moses comes in. He's going to free the slaves. And he starts negotiating with Pharaoh. He's the king of Egypt. He starts negotiating the release of all the Hebrews, all the Jewish people. And Pharaoh, you know, he's king. He doesn't want to let the free labor go. He's like, these are my slaves. And God wants a win-win, so he starts negotiating and tries to say, listen, you know, you're going to let them go. And he starts upping the ante. And the Pharaoh gets very stubborn about it. No, these are my slaves. And while all this is going on, Israel, like, they're waiting, you know. They're, like, been in slavery. Like, oh, when are we going to be free? When are we going to be free? And they start to disagree with how God is handling things. And I did want to ask the question, what's going on in your life and you totally disagree with how God's handling it? And you know, you might be far away from God, might be close to God, but you're looking at something, you're going, God, I don't agree how you're handling this at all. And this was Israel. They're like, God, listen, I just don't be patient with Egypt. I mean, just nuke them and get us out of here, you know. And here's God negotiating, because here's what you need to know. God doesn't have any enemies. I mean, you know, Israel is the chosen group for sure, because the Messiah is going to come from them, and they're a display nation. But he doesn't love Israel any more than anybody else. He loves Egypt. And, you know, you can get mixed up sometimes. It's like, well, God doesn't like any of those people over there, but he really likes us over here. He loves everybody the same. And so he's negotiating. He's trying to pull this thing off. And finally, it gets to the point where Moses comes in, and he talks to Pharaoh, the king. He says, listen, this is serious. I mean, God's not going to back off, you know. And he's like, you need to, like, and Pharaoh says, no. The labor stays. He says, well, I'm telling you, And so he tells me, he said, the angel of death, and you can read this, get a free Bible in Exodus, that the angel of death is going to come, and every firstborn Egyptian is going to die if you don't, like, back off this thing. And this is serious stuff. And Pharaoh says, no. So sure enough, what Israel does, God comes to him and says, I want you to take a lamb, every family get a lamb, sacrifice this lamb, put it, this is kind of weird, but this is what happened in the Bible, put a little blood above the doorpost. So, you know, that's what they did. And then, listen to this now, when the angel of death comes, it's all in the Bible, he will pass over your house. And sure enough, it all happens. It's historical. Every Hebrew firstborn, every Israelite is spared. None of them die. And it's the last straw for Pharaoh. I mean, Israel gets away, and they get their own country, and the story goes on. But it was this Passover lamb. That was the big thing. And so what the Jewish people would do is every year they would celebrate this because they knew that, you know, there was a time that we totally disagreed with God, very unhappy with God, but he still came through for us. And that's his feast. Now, Jesus is 12 years old, and they're at this feast, and so... Now remember, they come in from all the different places. So they live in Nazareth, so about 3 days they travel down there. There's no shuttle. They don't have the tracks or anything like that. They're walking, you know. They're packing their stuff. Extended families with them. All these people come in. So hard to get housing. You know, where are we going to put the kids? How are we going to get food? There's big things going on. And Jesus is 12 years old, and it's a big year for him because when you're 12 in the Jewish culture of that time, it's the last year of your childhood. When you become 13 years old, if you're a Jewish boy, you become a Jewish man. As a man, if you have a beard at all, or if you've like gone through, you know, or your voice, or I mean, you're a man now. And during your 12th year, your father would spend special attention with you all the time to mentor you and prepare you for being a man. It's all but lost in our culture. But in their culture, he'd spend the entire year working with you, and you were going to continue in the trade. For Jesus, that would be a carpenter. His father was a carpenter. And everything is structured around the 12-year-old, like getting them ready and prepared to become a man. So this was a big, big special feast for him because this was the first feast and last. This is the, you know, he's going to be a man next year. So Joseph would have spent all this time with him. Here's what's happening. This is a time of preparation for Jesus, the boy, to become a man. And I wanted to ask the question, is God preparing you for anything? Because I've discovered that sometimes we can totally disagree with God because we don't understand that he has us in a season of preparation. And he knows what's coming next. And so there's some things happening in my life, and I don't particularly agree with them, and I'm not happy about them, but I don't understand that they're all going on to prepare me for what's next. This is a preparation time. So Jesus is in all of that, and they had this preparation time, and now the family's leaving. The feast is over, and so they take off. They don't see Jesus around. We're like, he's probably running around with his cousins because big family, lots of kids. Jesus had brothers and sisters, big family. So they go along, and then that night, they all like hunker down for the night, and they're like, where is he? He's not there. He's back in Jerusalem. For him, it seems the preparation time's not over, and his parents, I mean, I don't know if you've ever... had a little niece or nephew or one of your children, and somehow they get away in the store, or you don't know where they are. We had this crazy dog for a while in our family. We all loved this dog, but this dog, you could not keep this dog locked up, and he jumped the fence. He was an Australian Shepherd, and this was the craziest dog. We loved the dog, but he just ran away from his home and the people that loved him all the time. Here being my son, out in the middle of the night, midnight, driving around the neighborhoods, looking for this dog, Mo, like scared, and you'd have this pit in your stomach, because, you know, our dogs are like family members. I don't mean to seem weird, but we love them, you know, so like they're important to us, and we're like, where did he go? What's he thinking? You know, it's like, where's our dog? And you get like a pit. Well, this is their son. And I'm driving around looking for a dog, and I'm scared I'm never going to see him again. Can you imagine if it was your son? I mean, they're freaking out. And so they head back. And let me tell you, here's what happens. It sets off a huge disagreement between Jesus and his parents. They get into a huge disagreement over this thing. And there's two places we often go. Maybe you go here when you have a disagreement with God. Here's the first one. And look on your notes, turn it over. The very first one is, easy to say this. What are you doing, God? What are you doing? I mean, they travel all the way back there, and here's what happens. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers, and they're not amazed. They roll up, and they see Jesus, and they're not happy about this. Like, what are you doing? And what's, you know, we've been frantic. We went to bed two nights and we didn't even know if we were ever going to see you again. We didn't know where you were. We didn't know what was going on. And keep in mind, Jesus isn't 4 or 5 years old with a little rattle and a pacifier in his mouth. He's 12. He knew he was staying behind. And he knew he didn't tell his parents or ask their permission. When's the last time something happened in your life and it dawned on you, well, God never told me this was going to happen. He never even asked my permission to do this. Jesus stays behind, and he never tells his parents, and he never asks their permission. And they're like, what are you doing? And here's something I've discovered. Sometimes something will happen in my life with God, and it has a huge impact on my life and all the people around me, and he doesn't even have the courtesy to tell me or ask my opinion or get my permission. I mean, he starts acting like God on me, and he just does it. And Jesus does it. And of course, now, I never mind that when this happens and it's something that I like. You know, if God does something and I like it, like all of a sudden I come in and it's a big bonus for you at work. You know, so you get this big bonus at work, you know, and all of a sudden that night God, you know, sort of like you say, oh, I didn't even think to run the bonus by you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to catch you by surprise, but here, let's stop the bonus. And you know, I didn't mean to do that, and I forgot to ask and get your permission. I'm like, oh, no, wait a second, God. I know you got a lot going on. You got a lot of irons in the fire, God. Sometimes you got to move fast. You can't be running everything by me. I trust you. Go ahead and leave the bonus, God. But when he does something I don't like and I disagree with, it's like, what are you doing? You didn't say anything about this. I was telling the church in West Valley, there was a time back in the day that I wanted to be the guy up here that sang the songs and played all the instruments. And two problems, I didn't play an instrument and I sing like a cow. So it was like I had no chance at it. But the problem was, is I liked it. I thought it'd be cool and you're under the lights and everything. But here was the other thing, and I'm just going to put it out there. I'm not proud of this. But I noticed, I was a single guy, I noticed all the girls in the church, they liked all the guys on the stage. And so I came into Christianity at high school, and you know, I didn't know how everything worked and everything, and what I found out is nothing like high school. It's like high school, you know, I don't mean to be crass, but the guys with the most drugs got the girls, and like you try that in church, they're like, girls don't like you. And so I was like, well, how do you get the girls? Oh, you gotta get on stage. So I want to be the worship leader, right? And so they have worship leading practice every Friday night, and I find that out. So I start going to worship practice, and I acted like a roadie. I'd help them set up the speakers, and I'd drop little hints, too. Said, you know, I'm thinking of doing some singing someday. And these poor guys were, like, totally trying to ignore me, like, oh, my gosh, this guy. You know, I never got invited to the place. And I started helping out. Sometimes I'd be over on the side mouthing the songs and kind of moving around, just hoping somebody would see me, like, hey, what about me as a substitute? You know, I'm going to be the guy. And then this is a true story. One night the pastor comes up to me and says, Robin, could I speak to you for a moment? I have something very important to ask you to do. And I'm like, yes, babes are coming because I'm going to be the man on the stage. You know, it's like, and he takes me over to the side and he says, Robin, I've been thinking a lot about this and I'd like to offer you the position of church janitor. And I'm thinking, say what? There's no babes in that. What are you talking about? I'm on the stage, man. I'm not asking for a vacuum cleaner. I'm asking for a microphone. Yeah. And it was this. It was like, what are you doing, God? You see how hard I'm working here to be the worship leader. What's with this? This is like, you know, I'm not. Just want to check in. Checking in with you. How do you handle when God just does something and you disagree with it because you don't like it? Is not liking something your criteria on whether it's good for you or not? Is it your criteria on whether or not it's God's will or not? Because a lot of times that's how it can go. It's like, whoa, it's not the will for me to be the church janitor. I took the job as church janitor, and man, I learned a ton about being a servant. There's an old saying, you know you're a servant when you're treated like one. And when you're the church janitor, man, you're treated like a servant. And I learned a lot about just serving Jesus and serving him in a hidden way and just doing it because I loved him and learning how to do that that I never would have learned on the stage. Plus, the church would have like shrunk down to nobody if they let me up there singing. So they made the right decision, you know. It's like, but I'm just saying, I mean, is your criteria I have to like it? Oh, that's God. That ain't God. And so that's what's up here. It's like, what are you, you know? And here's something. They find him back in church. That's pretty crazy. I mean, who runs back to church and hangs out? I mean, he's back in church, and you know, they roll up on him, and they're like, Jesus, what are you doing? He's like, listen, you know, keep this in mind. They've been on the road for 12 or 13 days. Have you ever been on vacation with your family for like a week and a half, and you get home, and you need another vacation? Yeah, they're tired. They're like, we've been finding, you know, places to eat and, you know, places to sleep and alternative housing, and our schedule's all mixed up, and the kids are running all over the place, nappy hair, they're not taking showers, and they're just like, we got to get home, Jesus. We're not supposed to be doing this. And here's something I wanted to say to you. Do you ever have disagreements with God on how long something should last? Because they roll up on Jesus and say, Jesus, we're done with the Passover. Hello? We're done with it. We've been here a week. We traveled 3 days. We're on our way home. By the way, how dare you drag us back here? We're done. Remember, Dad did all this cool stuff. We're done with the Passover. And here's what happens sometimes in our life. I'm done, but God's not. Because remember, Jesus is God, even at 12. He's not done. But they are. That can cause a disagreement. Did you ever, I don't know if you ever say this, but you're like, I am so done with this. I mean, come on, God. I have been working so hard at this company. I show up on time all the time. I'm a great team member. I like really, really try hard, and my numbers are good. And still, again, I get passed over. I am so done with this, God. I've got more than one set of friends that have been waiting for a baby forever. And, you know, seriously, another one of our friends putting it on Facebook about their baby. Seriously, another baby in the nursery at church. I mean, we've been trying. That's the good part about not having a baby. But the bad part is, you know, like, did you get the joke? That's the good part. Oh, you didn't get the joke. So anyways, the bad part is, you know, try, no baby. And I've never talked to any couple ever that would say, hey, listen, we'll try one time and skip for an entire year if you give us a baby. Seriously, and I am so done with this, God. I am done with the false alarms. I am done with the pregnancy tests. I am done with all the financial planning to see. I'm done. Have you ever had a disagreement with God and you were done before he was? You finished, and that's what they're saying. They're, Jesus, we're done. We're done with the Passover, Jesus. We're all finished with this. And Jesus is very straight ahead with me. He says, but I'm not. I'm not done. I've always found out that it's good to finish at the same time as God. Because if you finish early and he's not done, he's going to keep going. So here's something I want to ask. Transition, just to think about it in your mind. Here's something to ask. I want to ask this question. Can God just do it in your life? Or do you need to have veto power? I want you to give $1,000 of your money away. Whoa, God, I told you about my wallet already. That's my money. Well, who got you your job? Who got you your education? Don't be laying that stuff on me. I did the homework. I have veto power. Here's what I've discovered. Find the area of your life that you have veto power in, and that's where you can't trust Jesus. Does he have the right? Can he just do it in your life, and are you good with that? Now, here's the thing to ask yourself the question. Do you really want to be the final decision maker on every event in your life, or would you rather trust Jesus? Because that's what it comes down to. Mary and Joseph are like, hey, what are you doing? we do not like this, and we've been done for a while, thank you. So it's like it's a moment for them. Then look at the second thing in your notes. Why have you treated me this way? And this is an interesting one. This is what Mary says to her son. She comes and she sees him, and she sees all this is going on, and she says to Jesus, she says, Jesus, and this is what she says. Listen, she says, why have you treated your father and I this way? Why do moms always have to drag dad in it? You know, it's like, well, wait till your dad gets home. I didn't go through that because I didn't have a dad around. But I saw my friends turn white when their mom said, when your dad gets home, he's going to, oh, don't tell dad, no, anything but dad. Don't tell dad, you know. So Mary drops it right there. Says, your father, well, how could you do this to your father and I? Mary says that to him. And it is interesting because, you know, Joseph, that must have been an interesting job to parent the Messiah. You know, that's something. But having stepkids is not that easy anyways. Can you imagine having God's kid? I mean, he doesn't look like you, but he's yours. Doesn't act like you necessarily, but he's yours. So he's parenting the Messiah all these years. He's doing a good job. He's like, you're going to be a carpenter, and you're going to, you know, follow in this thing, and here's where you're going to be. And Mary says, how could you do this to your father? This of all the times. This is the special year. You're 12 years old. You're spending all this time together. How could you do this to him? Of all the times, how could you dishonor him now? You're supposed to be honoring him. And Jesus says, Mom, I am honoring my father. How could you do this to him now? When's the last time you thought this? God, you have terrible timing. How could you do this now? I talk to people, and you know, they're one of their relatives' lives blow up, and all of a sudden they get to take their children into their home and raise their kids, and they're like, how could you do this now? We're just getting ahead in our careers, and we're starting to have some fun. We don't want to raise a 2-year-old. How could you do this now? It's like, God, your timing's terrible. And I'm not talking about the things in life that you know are your fault. Because we all do stuff in life, and we know it. We know it's happening because we caused it. God, how could you let me get an F on this test? Well, of course I didn't study. I watched TV. I went out partying. I got drunk on Thursday. I slept in on Friday. And then I went to take the test, and I didn't know anything. How could you let me get an F? It's like, we all do that. It's a little girl that ran up to her mom and said, I have poop in my pants, and it's not mine. Like, come on. We know our poop, you know? But I am saying this. There are times in our life where we can legitimately say, God, I didn't ask for this. This is your thing. I didn't want this to happen. I didn't ask for the economy to go upside down and all of a sudden my house is worth half of what it used to be. I didn't ask to get downsized out of my job. I didn't do any of this stuff. Come on, God. I didn't ask for any of this to happen. I mean, how could you do this to me, God? How could you do it to me now? And honestly, you can say sometimes to God, I don't like your timing. I'm not ready for this. I didn't ask for this. I can't handle this. And Jesus says something interesting. Look how he answers. Let's read it together nice and loud, because I don't feel silly up here reading by myself, but where it says, why were you searching? Nice and loud, okay? Read it with me, like back in second grade. Ready? Go. Why were you searching for me, he asked. Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house? But they didn't understand what he was saying to them. Yeah, here's what he says. Interesting. He says, didn't you know I had to be in my father's house? So Mary says, how could you do this to us now? And he answers her question with a question. He says, didn't you know I had to be in my father's house? And you know, it must have been odd for Jesus to have his dad, Joseph, instructing him on the Passover and taking him around to the feast and showing him all the stuff. When Jesus has a cousin, his name is John the Baptist. When John the Baptist saw Jesus one time, he said, behold the Lamb of God, who takes away the sins of the world. I mean, Joseph is look, son, they're bringing out the lamb, and That's the lamb that takes everybody's sins away and sets everybody free. And Jesus is probably thinking, yeah, I know about that lamb. He says, that lamb's going to be sacrificed now, and that lamb's blood is going to free everybody. And Jesus is probably thinking, in about 20 years, I'm going to be that lamb. He might even be thinking, you know, Dad, someday you're not even going to need this Passover feast anymore, because I'm going to be the ultimate sacrifice, and my blood is going to set everybody free once and for all. You won't have to come and do it every single year. And in fact, they call Jesus the Passover Lamb. So, you know, it's probably odd for him to have his dad showing him all the stuff, and Jesus saying, yeah, I know, oh, I know, yeah, I know, I understand. And, you know, he's showing him all this stuff, and when it's all said and done, he's, you know, I have to spend more time with God. I got a lot coming. Mom, come on. You know who I am. Don't forget. And it does slip away sometimes. And so he says to her, he says, I had to do this. Which is an interesting word. In the original text, it means necessary. What he tells his mother, he says, Mom, it was necessary for me to stay. Remember, Mom, who I am? Remember what I'm going to do? I needed to stay in Jerusalem. I needed to talk more with the religious leaders. I needed more training. Dad did great, but I need more. I have to be with God. I have to prepare myself for what's coming next for me. Mom, I'm going to be sacrificed for the sins of the world. We're not talking about a little lamb here. We're talking about me. It was necessary. And a lot of disagreements can melt away if you can hear God say, wait, it's necessary. And other times when someone says, God has a plan, you're like, don't care. You know, be careful when you say that to people, because sometimes people are hurting inside, and it's like they're having a really hard time. So, oh, there, sister, you know, God has a plan. It's a good way to get a slug, because they're like, what? This is his plan for me to have to go through this? Jesus, we were ready to go home already. We were scared to death we couldn't find you. What do you mean, why were you searching for me? We're your parents. We love you. I don't know if you were ever a little kid and you came home later the next day and you didn't tell anybody and nobody went looking for you and they didn't care. And part of you was, oh, I can do whatever I want. And the other part of you was just dying inside. Like, doesn't anybody care that they didn't know where I was? I went through that. I remember one time, gone, 24 hours, I walked in the house and everybody saw me and they never said nothing. I didn't think they even knew I was gone. And I'm like, junior high school. And he's got different parents. They're like, what are you talking about? We love you. He says, Mom, listen to this is Tim Allen, Last Man Standing. I don't even know if you've seen that show. It's pretty cool. He's 11 years old. He's talking about what it was like to lose his father. He says, no one really had time to explain to an 11-year-old kid what to do, so I woke up early wondering, who in the hell are you, God, and why did you do this? At 11, you don't understand. You don't understand why your father was there 1 minute and the next he's ripped away. You're told, God has a plan. Well, you know what? I'd like to see that plan, maybe get involved in that plan, because that's not my plan. I got by, but there's a price to pay. You're eventually going to have an angry 11-year-old running around as an adult. So sometimes, you know, it's difficult to get God has a plan. And Jesus tries to tell his mom, he says, Mom, I had to do this, Mom. It was necessary. Do you know what kind of plan's working in your life right now? And do you disagree with it at all? You're not happy with God, and it's hard to trust him. Because you're like, the hell does he think, you know, show me the plan. I didn't sign off on it. And yet Mary starts to get it. I mean, she's listening to this, and I think it all starts coming back to her, because she's been in this situation before. As a very young woman, when the angel came to her and said, God has picked you to give birth to the Messiah. And she's like, what? What's he doing? Why is he doing this to me? Who am I? And she starts to remember it. And you know, She made this choice to trust at that time in her life. And she said the same thing that happened here. When the angel comes and says, listen, you who are highly called, you know, you highly favored woman, God has selected you to give birth to the Christ, the Messiah. And she's really struggling with it. Pick somebody else. I'm a little Jewish girl. And he's like, you're the one. And then it says this, after she starts, she's like, okay, I'll trust you. It says that she treasured it in her heart. Same thing that happens to her here. She's listening to her son, and she starts to figure out. She says, oh, I remember the last time you said something to me, God, and I totally disagreed with it. I didn't know why you were doing it, and I didn't know why you were doing it to me, but I started to treasure it once I started trusting. Here's the good news, right in your notes. Your trust becomes your treasure. And Jesus went down to Nazareth with them, and he was obedient to them, and his mother treasured all these things in her heart. Now listen, as we wind down, I want you to know this. The very thing that you disagree with God about can become your treasure. And what's a treasure? It's something that you've of great value. That's a treasure. What do you have in your life and you treasure it? I'll tell you something really weird in my life. My grandfather passed on some things to me. That's who I lived with a lot, and he was my father figure. I loved him so much. And he had this shoehorn from Scotland, and it says Scotland on it. And I saw him use it all my life. I don't know, he's just a shoehorn guy. Most people don't do it now, but he had this shoehorn. And when all of his stuff was passed out, I got his shoehorn. It's a treasure to me. If you saw it, you'd probably think, that thing's worth a nickel. Not to me. Because it's tied to him. Mary starts to get it. She goes, oh, I remember. The last time I was in this spot when I disagreed with you and I started to trust you, it became so valuable to me. I became the mother of Christ. And do you know, you might be unhappy with God right now in your life. You might be, because you disagree with what he's doing. It's hard to trust him. But I want you to know something. If you will trust him, the very thing that you disagree with will become valuable in your life. It'll have great, great value. In fact, Jesus tells his parents, he said, I know you're wondering what I'm doing. I know I didn't ask you. And I didn't tell you, and I know that it's going longer than you think, and I know I did it at a time that was terrible timing for you. You know, I know all that, and I'm trying to tell you that I had to do it because Mom and Dad, it's going to become so valuable someday, because someday I'm going to die on the cross, and that's going to be valuable. It's going to be so valuable to you, Mom and Dad. In fact, it's going to be valuable for everyone that ever lived. Where do you need to trust God in your life? Because right now you're unhappy with him. And that very location can become your treasure and of great value to you.